Okay, our last speaker for the morning session is David Fedor. Dr. Fedor is board certified in critical care medicine, internal medicine, hospice medical director certified. He's an intensivist at McCady Hospital and medical director for palliative care at McCady Hospital. He is assistant medical director for palliative care for Intermountain Healthcare and the Utah representative to the National POLST Task Force. And we are really glad to have him because I think this is kind of a new topic. I think people are familiar with hospice care, but what is palliative care? And palliative care actually is in a few different arenas, including inpatient palliative care, and there's an outpatient clinic palliative care, and there's even palliative care home care. And so I think Dr. Fedor will speak to all of these. And we're really excited to have him. We're running a little bit late, but that's okay. We'll have him go for his full half hour, and then we'll adjourn. So Dr. Fedor.
Okay, nice. Good morning. Before I start, a couple things. One, I apologize for the scrubs. I do have other clothes that aren't scrubs, but right after this talk, I have to head over to McKay and do some ICU stuff. So seeing patients right after this, only reason I have scrubs on. I'd also like to thank Dr. April Krucka, who's not here today, who was actually going to be giving this talk, but when she was unavailable, I stepped in because the newest thing in palliative care is really outpatient, and she helped me with this slide deck immensely. Brandy Millward, who was actually going to be helping me with this, couldn't make it today because she had a something come up suddenly a couple days ago. She was going to be doing the second half of this talk, which was actually a case presentation, so I'll be handling that. And since I don't have slides for that, we're going to go off memory, but it should be okay. So what is new in palliative care? Palliative care in and of itself is sort of new. The specialty is not that old. The newest thing in palliative care is outpatient. It is a growing field. In general, palliative care is not really a big field everywhere yet. That's growing, but if you were to ask what's brand new in palliative care, I would say outpatient, and that's what Dr. Krucka does full-time. I am the system medical director for palliative care for Intermountain, but I don't do outpatient palliative care, so a lot of these slides I cobbled together after discussing it with Dr. Krucka. She did a few of them, I did a few of them, and this is kind of our brainchild. So I'd like to thank her and the entire staff and Brandy and everybody at the McKD Palliative Care Program. Anybody I miss, I apologize. Okay, let's see. Okay, so this is the World Health Organization definition of what palliative care is. And this definition came about from a few different sources. They talked to physicians, they talked to actually lay people, and this is the definition that was voted as the most thorough and best. So palliative care is an approach that improves quality of life of patients and their families facing problems associated with any life-threatening or life-limiting illness through prevention and relief of suffering by means of early identification and impeccable assessment. I like the use of the word impeccable. And treatment of pain and other problems, physical, psychosocial, and spiritual. And the things to look about here are it's an approach and it's prevention. So the biggest thing that when you say palliative care hospice, and the specialty is palliative care slash hospice, but they are not the same thing, is that when people hear palliative care, they think end of life, someone in the last 6 months of life, someone actively dying, and that really isn't what palliative care does. Most of what palliative care does is not that. And the World Health Organization wanted this definition to stress that. The other diagram they use a lot is, this is a way to look at palliative care. So palliative care is the big circle. The little circle inside of it is hospice. So hospice is inside of palliative care, but palliative care encompasses much more than hospice. So the difference between palliative care and hospice is between patient goals and prognosis. So hospice, you have to have a prognosis of 6 months or less to have the benefit of the Medicare hospice benefit. Your diagnosis and prognosis needs to be 6 months or less. Palliative care can happen at any time, any stage, any age, in any illness that is serious, chronic, or life-limiting. Whether that life-limiting is 6 years from now, 5 years from now, or 1 year from now, or 20 years from now. The similarities are everybody always focuses on quality of life, palliative care or hospice or both. Symptom management is always a priority and a team approach. So one of the interesting things about palliative care and hospice is that, by definition, in order to have a successful palliative care or a real palliative care program, either whether that be inpatient or outpatient, it has to be multidisciplinary and team approach. So it isn't just a physician and a nurse. It's a physician, nurse, social worker, chaplaincy. It's a whole team. Those are the core elements, and there are other team members as needed. And we've been able to successfully build that at McKay. And it'll be one of the things that I'll talk about today. So the other question is, who is appropriate to be referred for palliative care? So these are some things. Diagnosis, cancer at any stage. The cancer guidelines, the actual National Institutes for Health and cancer societies themselves have stated that anybody who gets diagnosed with any kind of cancer at any stage on diagnosis should have a palliative care referral. And that's whether the goal is cure or not. So it's, and any chronic organ failure, so chronic CHF, chronic COPD, those are the two big ones. Whether that CHF or COPD is beginning stage or end stage, they can benefit from palliative care. Dementia, all types. Even though under the hospice benefit, you only currently say people have Alzheimer's dementia, the benefit clinically is for all types of dementia. Any degenerative neurologic disease, any devastating medical event. In short, any diagnosis, any patient who has a serious, chronic, life-limiting or life-threatening illness, whether that is 6 months from now, 1 year from now, or 10 years from now. Common presentations, I won't read them out loud, but really anything that you see along with a chronic, debilitating, or progressive disease. So, a palliative care consult, and this is mostly inpatient or outpatient, but we're going to talk specifically about the outpatient world because this is what's newest in palliative care. So the consult is two parts. So when someone goes to see Dr. Krucka and her team, or any outpatient palliative care provider or physician, they look at symptom management, so pain, dyspnea, nausea, anxiety, depression, constipation, weakness. Pick a physical symptom, palliative care will assess for that. They also look at goals of care, so quality of life, what does that mean for any individual patient? An advanced directive, whether that be a pulsed form, which is a physician order for life-sustaining treatment, or an advanced directive naming a healthcare proxy. Informed decision-making, family and social dynamics, and the case that I'm going to talk about at the end will go over all of this. Medical ethics issues and any disposition. Do they want to be hospitalized? What are their goals? You know, and it is an interdisciplinary team, so it's not just the physician having these discussions. It's everybody on the team at different times or at the same time. And to keep in mind, the consult that's an outpatient will also speak with the primary care physicians or subspecialists. So if this patient's a cancer patient, the palliative care team will be in close discussions with the oncologist. Talk about, okay, we saw Mr. Smith here, here's what we talked about, here's what his goals are, here's what we've been doing. So it's not in a vacuum, it's part of multidisciplinary total care, including all subspecialists and primary care physicians. So what we offer in the Ogden area, and in all of Intermountain, the North region has the most robust services, and I'm going to brag a little bit because we have the only fully functional outpatient clinic, and we have the most robust inpatient clinic inpatient service at McKady. So we're very proud of that, and we've had a great team helping us build that, and we've had a lot of support from administration. So we have an inpatient consult service, of which I am the medical director, and that includes three mid-level, two NPs and a physician's assistant that do 7 day a week, 12-hour day consult services. And I know a lot of the physicians in this room have utilized us, and we've been growing faster than we can get staff, which is a good thing. And an outpatient clinic, which includes Dr. Krucka, a nurse navigator, a social worker, chaplain that's coming very soon. And there are also home-based palliative care services through Intermountain Home Care and Hospice. They have actually started a palliative care home-based service for patients that can't quite get to clinic and for patients that don't quite qualify for hospice but would qualify and benefit from palliative care services. And I won't speak to that too much because I'm not involved in palliative care home care. As the system director, I sort of am, but we're trying to marry those two services together. And non-Intermountain home agencies, there's lots of those. There are a lot of hospice agencies in this state. Per capita, Utah has one of the highest usages and availability of hospice beds of any state. The average hospice bed availability is about something like 30 patients per bed, or 30 beds per patient. In Utah, it's more like 70, which is double or almost sometimes triple the national average, depending on who you look at. Why that is, I don't know, but we're tripping over hospice companies in the state, which is a good thing. I've originally worked in New Hampshire and Vermont, and there are not that many, and there are not that many services. So having too many can be difficult in trying to herd cats and figure out who's good, who's not. But it's better than having one who can't take on any more patients because they're full. So Utah is unique in that way, especially since we have a very young state, too. So we have a lot of hospice and home care providers, but we also have the youngest per capita age. So I'm not sure how that worked out, but it's a good problem to have. So this is the outpatient team. In the middle is Dr. Krucka. On her right is Nikki Ningalia, who's the RN coordinator, and Brandy Millward is the outpatient social worker who was supposed to be here today, but unfortunately couldn't make it. So they have a freestanding clinic. It's not embedded anywhere. It's actually at McKay D. It is Monday through Thursday, 8 to 4:30. The team members are a physician, an RN. She's also an RN navigator, social worker, and coming soon, chaplaincy. I think they have permission to hire. They're just in the interviewing process. And they work very closely with the inpatient team. It's fairly seamless between inpatient and outpatient. We see a lot of patients on the inpatient side that will eventually need an outpatient consultation, and those patients are referred before discharge. And occasionally, depending on the day, Dr. Krucka can meet them while they're still in the hospital. You can also refer from primary care offices, and patients can self-refer. So you don't need to be hospitalized to get involved in the outpatient palliative care team. If you have patients you think would benefit, just call. So there is a growing body of evidence about the impact of outpatient palliative care medicine. There are four well-designed randomized interventions, and the couple articles below that are footnoted, the lead author, Michael Rabo, we actually had him as a consultant at Intermountain as a system consultant to look at our outpatient system. So he's considered a leading mind in outpatient, and this is his work. So it improved patient satisfaction scores across the board, regardless of the specialty and regardless of the diagnosis. It improved symptom control and quality of life across the board, whether the patient was looking for cure or whether it was stage one cancer or stage four cancer or EF of 40% versus EF of 20%. It didn't matter where the patient was on their disease journey, their quality of life and satisfaction improved being involved with palliative care. It reduced healthcare utilization and cost. And one of the big things we're doing as a system in Intermountain is starting to look at cost avoidance. Because a lot of times, as an ICU physician, I see patients show up in the ICU that don't really want to be there, but they haven't had discussions for whatever reason about whether or not they should be in the ICU. Lengthened survival in certain populations. There were a few good studies that showed that All right, so this just turned off. So there were actually a couple of good studies that showed that cancer patients who were involved with palliative care, whether or not they were getting active chemo, had longer life expectancy. Why that is, we're not sure. We think it has something to do with symptom control and overall functional status was improved with palliative care. So there's a lot more studies being done. The data on this are not exactly robust because it's new. This is, a new field, especially outpatient palliative care is a new field, so a lot of data is being collected. So by no means is it, yes, this is why, because we have an N of 40,000 patients. It's still new, but all of the data that's being collected are very significant and encouraging. So I can't forget the inpatient team. This is us. When we started this a few years ago, it was myself and Cindy Bauman, who is depending on two over from my right. She and I kind of bootstrapped this along with administrative support, and it has now grown into a rather robust team. I think we're carrying 12 or 13 consults daily, and we're actually getting to the point where we're deferring some consults because we're so busy on certain days. It's a good problem to have. I would be remiss if I didn't give a shout out to them and to thank them. I don't know if any of them are here today, but I'd like to thank Susie Morgel, Cindy Bauman, and Marty Trunell. They make me look very good. They do most of the heavy lifting, and I just show up and go, "Hi, I'm the director." If they're here, thank you. So it's time for a case. Brandy Millward was going to discuss a case, and I don't actually have slides on this. Some of you may have heard this case before. We have many, many cases, and when I asked her to send me one that she thought would be useful, she said, just do Mr. K, because you know him, you were involved with him, and you can do that without having to repeat the slides. So the case I'm going to discuss is Mr. K. He's a 59-year-old gentleman. He was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. This was in April of 2014. He had Mets at the time of diagnosis to liver and lymph nodes. He had chemotherapy with actual reasonable tumor response and was doing pretty well. On 10/10/2014, he underwent a hemicolectomy that actually went well initially. Postoperatively, had complications with Clostridium difficile, had some symptom issues. We actually were consulted by the attending surgeon on the inpatient side for goals of care, because he hadn't really had that discussion yet. He didn't have a pulse form. He didn't have a power of attorney, a medical power of attorney, and he was having some symptoms. So the inpatient team helped with his symptom, with his pain symptoms, helped him get a pulse form filled out, and helped him define his goals of care. They also referred him to the outpatient attending in 2014 and to the outpatient palliative care clinic. At the time of discharge and referral to the outpatient clinic, his goal was cure and was full go. Let's do chemo. Let's fix everything, and it was going to be following up palliative care for symptom assessment and symptom management. Prior to discharge, the oncologist and surgeon were both aware of this plan, and during the following few months, every time he saw palliative care, the oncologist and the surgeon were aware, as was his primary care physician, of any changes in his status. So you don't see palliative care every week, every month. You see it as needed. Initially, Mr. K was seeing palliative care clinic about once a month, and it was once every 2 weeks, depending on his symptoms. There was a lot of outpatient coordination. So his initial visit was, he had his surgery on the 10th of October, 2014. His initial visit in palliative care clinic was the 30th of October. At that time, he was seen by chaplain. They addressed his pain, any GI issues he may have, psychosocial and spiritual issues, because he was having a lot of trouble. His family was having trouble coming to grips with this, and they just asked him a question: what if you don't get better? What if this doesn't work? Have you thought about what happens then? And they hadn't. So a lot of the visit was spent on that. Like, we're going to try to fix you. Your goal is cure, but what happens if you don't get cured? What happens if this doesn't work? What happens if you don't go into remission? What happens if you end up back in the hospital? And the nice thing about palliative care, it's a multidisciplinary approach, and they have an hour to spend with the patient and the patient's family, as opposed to busy primary care physicians and definitely not the inpatient team. So this is something that they literally can have them come in for an hour and discuss all of this. And it's done in stages, sometimes with the whole team, sometimes with just social work, sometimes with just the physician, sometimes the visit's an hour, broken up into 15-minute blocks, depending on what they need. So at that time, he continued to follow with surgery, oncology, and his goal was cure. Months went by. Symptoms were well controlled, continued to get chemotherapy. April 9th, 2015, so now we're into the following year, he was seen by the outpatient palliative care attending. At this point, his symptoms had progressed. His cancer was less responsive to chemo and was starting to spread even farther. They reviewed his pulse form, which at that time was do everything at all times, full CPR, intubate, put him in the ICU, vasoactive medications. They spent quite a bit of time at that visit discussing symptom management, which was fairly well controlled. And at this point, Mr. K and his family said, you know, I've seen a decline. I don't feel the way I did a few months ago. I don't think I'd want to be aggressively managed with intubation, CPR, all those things if it were to get to that point. I'm not giving up, but I'm changing where my focus is at. So that was the 9th of April. That night, he started having a large amount of output from his ostomy, and they weren't sure what was going on. I mean, like, liters and liters of output from his ostomy. He became very sick and landed in the McKD emergency room on the 10th. The very astute ER physician saw the palliative care notes and did a few things. Called the ICU doc, who was me at the time, called the outpatient palliative care physician, and called oncology. Called all three of those services. And we came up with a plan with Mr. K's direction, so, you know, shared decision making, he was in charge, to admit him to the ICU for 24 hours, no CPR, no intubation, vasoactives were okay. The oncologist was reached via phone. Dr. Reaganis, who was the palliative care outpatient physician at the time, came to the emergency room, as did I. and we formulated a plan of care. Because the thinking was, does this represent a new infection, or is he just really dehydrated and needs a bunch of fluid? So we came up with a plan that we admit him to the ICU, get very aggressive for 24 hours, and this is what he wanted. Give him a bunch of fluid, treat him for infection, put him on vasoactives if need be, and then if he did not turn around, then we'd reassess his goals of care. After 24 hours of volume resuscitation and vasoactives, he was not getting any better, and he was actually worsening. I needed to add a second vasoactive agent, at which point had a discussion with him and his family at bedside, along with Dr. Reganis via phone, about where he wanted to go, and he said, I'm done. I don't want anything else aggressive. I would like to leave the ICU. Ideally, he wanted to go home, but we couldn't make that happen due to his level of instability. He was transferred up to the fifth floor, and Dr. Reganis and I took over as primary attendings and transitioned him to comfort measures, and he died within the next 12 hours with his family around him. And it was sad, and it was rough, but from the time he was diagnosed, or from the time we first met him in October of 2014 till April 2015, it showcased exactly what we mean by palliative care, multidisciplinary approach, and really allowing him to help direct his care with our guidance, along with following with his primary care physician, along with following with his oncologist and his primary surgeon and the palliative care team. And he died with his family around him, comfortable in the way he wanted. His family had told us later when we did some bereavement follow-up that they were sad but very happy that he died the way he wanted, and that they felt in control of his illness the entire time, that they didn't feel pushed through the system, they didn't feel bullied, they didn't feel lost, they felt they were in control, and they had a sense of this is about him, not about us, which is exactly what we want as physicians in any specialty. So that's a case that we're very proud of. I use this case a lot, some of you have heard it before, and it's because I was involved in it and I have it almost memorized. There are plenty of cases like that. A lot of them don't even make it to the ICU or make it to the hospital. There are a ton of cases that the inpatient and outpatient team can talk about that are very similar as far as helping patients through their journey of a complex illness. But this is one that we're proud of in that it was done early. The inpatient palliative care clinic or outpatient palliative care clinic was not that old at the time of this case, and everything fired on all six cylinders, so it was great. So that's all I have. As far as what's new in the specialty of palliative care. Really, palliative care is new. I mean, it's not new. We've been doing palliative care as long as we've been physicians, but the specialty itself is new, and the newest thing of that specialty is outpatient. So with that, I'm going to be quiet. Any questions, comments, concerns, hopes, votes, dreams, or ideas? And I'm happy to entertain them. If not, that's fine too. Yeah.
So if you already have somebody who's on hospice, you changed it to another hospice, or do you consult in addition to the hospice?
Do you mean?
Well, I have patients right now that are on hospice care,
okay.
But your services sound like they would be in addition to hospice care as far as palliative care. Is that the correct sense I get?
If a patient's on the Medicare hospice benefit, all of the things I described they should be getting.
Okay.
So the hospice team should de facto act the same way as a palliative care team.
Okay.
So you shouldn't need both services.
Okay. So new patients, I would consult with you, and you would be both palliative and the hospice.
We could do both. So what the way to look at palliative care would be, let's say you have someone who's CHF, okay. And their EF's 30%, and they're fairly functional, but you know where the trajectory of CHF goes. So they start following with the outpatient palliative care team. They continue active treatment. They continue to live their lives. A year or two later, they get into trouble where they now have an EF of 20% and they can't function like they can. Their mortality rate is now 6 months and they go on to hospice. At that point, they can transition from seeing the palliative care team to seeing the hospice team. In Ogden, there are two different teams. So we have the Intermountain hospice team. The Intermountain palliative care team are actually separate. So Dr. Krucka and I can both do hospice, but okay. I don't do hospice for Intermountain or any other companies, neither does she. So if you're following with Dr. Krucka and you need to go to hospice, she will coordinate that transition.
Okay.
But at that point, the hospice team takes over. And the multidisciplinary approach of the hospice team is virtually identical. It's different people, but the approach is identical.
Okay. the reason why I ask this is I have a lot of like really old patients, like over 90 years old, and they're on hospice, but then they get kind of better and hospice, you know, says I can't see them anymore, but yet they still need that additional support. And so I'm just thinking at that point,
if they don't qualify for hospice, because, and we see this a lot when I would do hospice, the 95-year-old who's got a lot of, you know, the dwindles, for lack of a better term, but doesn't have any major medical problems because they're 95.
Right.
You know, that's how you get to 95. You don't have major medical problems. They don't qualify for hospice because you go, well, I can't really put them on hospice.
You don't know when you're going
to
die.
But they have symptoms and they have other issues that need to be managed. Palliative care is perfect for that. And if they do transition into something that becomes hospice appropriate, then they can go to hospice.
Okay. The other question, I'm sorry, I don't mean to hog the mic, but like for instance, if you have a cancer patient that is admitted to the hospital under their oncologist, mm-hmm. is the oncologist the one who writes the order for the palliative care, or is the nurse on the floor, or how does
typically,
that consult become?
The inpatient palliative care consult's like any other consult. So the way we look at it is like we like the attending to consult us like you'd consult a cardiologist or critical care or. So we do a lot of education to have people. The nurses are probably our biggest advocates, and then they'll tell.
Okay, so a nurse can order for it, not the physician.
No, actually, the physician. What we like is the physician to put the order in, or if the nurse puts the order in, the physician to call us.
Okay.
Because, like anything, I wouldn't consult a cardiologist and be like, yeah, just consult cardiology. I'm not going to call them and tell them why.
Okay.
Same principle.
All right. So
we treat it like any other specialty and. And for the most part, that works out just fine.
Thank you.
Hmm? Hello. So, this isn't really much of a question, but I want to make a pitch to the people in the room. One of our board members, Rhonda Lair, one of the hearts and souls of this organization, she had advanced ovarian cancer, and she's really smart. She's got access to many things, and as I've watched and tried to help her, I've thought, you know, with the vagaries and of what to do next, what's right, who should take care of her. She gets operated in Salt Lake. It's inconvenient to continue to do things in Salt Lake. And if there were, which I think you guys can be, someone who thinks about the big picture of the patient and coordinates all the cogs that go into the wheel of taking care of somebody this sick. I tried to get her to do this, and I don't know if she's done it yet, but I just think it would have made her life easier. And so I think that's the thing. It isn't just about people dying, it's about people surviving.
The vast majority of patients that the palliative care clinic sees aren't dying. I mean, we're all dying. None of us are getting out of this life alive. But the vast majority of patients that they see don't have a 6-month or less diagnosis. Some of them are gonna live 5-6 years, but they're gonna have issues. And we help with that.
My questions are financial. Are there financial restrictions for accessing palliative care, as there are generally with some hospice? And does insurance cover broadly?
I can tell you that Select Health covers, and they treat it like any other medical specialty. As far as other insurances, from what I understand, we haven't had any issues with getting coverage. That it's essentially another office visit for another subspecialist. I know because of my dealings with Intermountain as the system director, I know Select Health covers. So if any of your patients have Select Health, they'll cover. If the pamphlet or something they get says that it covers hospice and not palliative care, there was some confusion about the way the literature was written because there was confusion about what hospice and palliative care are. But we have checked with the heads of Select Health, and any Select Health plan will cover palliative care like it covers any other specialty. They don't have to be hospice appropriate. And we haven't had any issues with other insurances. I can't speak for certain about all of them because I don't do the outpatient clinic, but in my discussions with Dr. Krucka, that hasn't been an issue.
I've been out of the active realm of the practice of medicine surgery for some time, and this is just an observation. I'm not sure whether it's good or bad, but I am concerned somewhat about continuity of care. When I was practicing, I tended to do all this stuff. Now we have hospitalists. So the primary care abdicates the care of his patient to hospitalists. Now, how close he follows or monitors, you know, depends on the physician. But now we have end-of-life care, sort of, or palliation. And we're seeing that, whether it's the age of specialization or what, I'm not sure. But it seems like, again, the personal physician, whether it's the family practitioner or general surgeon, as I did both, I say, well, okay, you take care of him. I'm wondering where the position of the personal physician fits in these changes. Whether it's good or bad, I can't say, but it looks like there's a continuity issue that may be missing.
Well, I do know that is a concern, and speaking for the McKady outpatient inpatient, specifically the outpatient, I know that Dr. Kruk and her team will contact everyone involved in the patient, from the primary care physician through the oncologist to the heart failure specialist, whoever sees this patient. I know for a fact that Dr. Kruk and her team will contact and make sure there are as few, let's see, how do I want to word this? Make sure that the continuity of care is as complete as is possible. The case that I presented is kind of one of those things where this patient ended up in the emergency room, but everybody involved in his care knew he was there and was involved in the care of the patient, from primary care through oncology, through surgery, critical care, and palliative care. So we all knew where the patient was. The phone calls were made, and the continuity of care was as good as we could get it. I know that that's one of the things that the team makes it a point to do, that if Dr. Smith comes in, if it's Dr. Smith's patient, and he or she comes into the clinic, we make sure that that physician gets a call either that day or the next to say, hey, I saw Mr. Jones today. A, did you know he was coming in? Because sometimes patients self-refer. And B, let me tell you what we've been doing. Because not everybody is in iCentra, not everybody is as an Intermountain physician. So whether they're an Intermountain physician or not, I know Dr. Kruk's team will keep the continuity of care as best as they can. I mean, it's not perfect, because nothing can be, but they try their best. And I agree, it is a concern that care gets fractured, and it's one of the things that we want to make sure we minimize. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Dr. Feeder, that was great, very needed topic. We have a break until 10 o'clock, so please visit the vendors and exhibitors outside. At 10 o'clock, we've got two options. One is in this room is the residents' presentation for the next 2 hours from 10 to 12, where the 6 senior residents from McKady Hospital will be given presentations on research and case studies. And then in ballroom C are two of the pitfall lectures from 10 to 11 and then 11 to 12. At 10 will be Say No to Narcotics from Daniel O'Connell, and at 11 is Emerging Risks of the EHR by Emily Clegg. Thanks.